So in GNUnet, we try to achieve anonymity, confidentiality for the users, deniability, accountability, and of course, hopefully, efficiency. That's kind of like everything, right? So the first people I talked about said, well, that's impossible. Well, we'll see about that. The applications are things like anonymous sharing of medical histories, distributed backups of important data. We could also think about ad hoc communication between small devices where you don't really care about whom you're talking to. And I'm fairly certain you can think of some other applications. We call this a network because we want to provide an infrastructure. File sharing, which we're currently doing, is only one application. Most components that we've been built can be used for other applications. Authentication of nodes, node discovery, encrypted channels, and accounting are things that can be used for also things like mix mailers or something like that in theory. And we want to go in that direction in the future. What are some basic other systems in this area? Well, there's the well-known Nutella service, distributed peer-to-peer network, which is kind of in the sense of being really peer-to-peer, no dedicated service, no central service, no trusted authorities, kind of one of our ancestors. Then there's Chort, which has kind of is a distributed database, in my opinion, which has a very efficient way to locate data. There's Freenet, which is kind of the first implementation of an anonymous peer-to-peer system. And there's Mojo Nation, which is kind of the first peer-to-peer system which had accountability. So, and we want to do everything. Okay, outline of the talk. We're first going to briefly talk about how data is represented in GNUnet, then how we search for data, how we provide anonymity, and then how we provide accounting. So, encoding, what are the basic requirements? Then we'll talk about our tree encoding, how we encode blocks, the limitations, and what we can do with it. So first of all, what do we want to achieve? Well, if content is submitted in plain text, that's usually bad because people can directly see what you're sharing or what you're receiving, so we have to encrypt it. If content must be encrypted to be shared in the system, usually you have the problem that if you want to keep using it on your local drive, you have to have a second copy. For example, if I want to put my MP3 collection into Freenet, well, I first have to encrypt it, and then I can't use that anymore to play it directly to my speakers. So that's bad. We don't want to have a second copy if I want to have a plain text copy on my drive. But still, I don't want to transmit it in plain text over the network. Another problem is if you encrypt it with some key, you want to make sure that if two people happen to have the same file and share the same file, you don't have two different copies in the network that you can't distinguish that look very different. Because if two people put the same file in, you may be able to download it from both sources in parallel and speed up the download speed by that. So what do we want to achieve is encoding. Intermediaries are not supposed to find out what the content was or what the query is that we're asking. They're not supposed to know what we're searching for. Hosts should be able to reply to the query that they receive and plausibly say, I didn't know what the question was. That's to protect the senders of the reply. And of course, you don't want to blow the content up. There are systems like Tangler, which kind of combine two documents, and this kind of makes it, you have to download twice as much data to retrieve a file, twice the file size, so we don't want to have that either. The first problem that also is kind of in Freenet, and that has been talked about briefly with the mix minion, is if you've got files of various sizes, the file size itself can be used to determine what kind of file it is. Right, I mean, how many files are 4,572 bytes long? Right, if the adversary has any idea what the file size is, that might be a very good way to guess what you're sharing there or what you're downloading. So the first thing we did was we encode the file in a tree like this, and every file is split up into blocks of 1K on the lowest level. We encrypt and store each of these blocks independently and then kind of store summary information on the next higher level on the tree. And all of these blocks, all of the little rectangles here in the picture, are kind of 1K, one uniform size. And when you download a file, you have to request each of them independently. This way, all files look like a 1K transfer. You cannot distinguish between transferring a 1K file transferring 50 1K files or 150K file. Looks like the same thing for the network. How do we do the blocks? Well, the I don't know if you can see this very well. So you have this 1K block on the lower corner, and the hash of this block is what you store in the block above in the tree. This is kind of what you need to retrieve the file, the key. If you know, well, sadly, Freenet talk seems to be not coming today, but in Freenet, they also use the hash of the content to identify the content. It's a very common technique. We use the hash of the content to as the key for the encryption. And so we need to store that on the next level. And since we have some place left, we can also use something like a CRC in that next block to do some additional checking. Now, so what does the algorithm look like? We split the content formally into 1K blocks, compute the hash of each of the blocks, and the hash of that hash. We encrypt the block with the first hash using a symmetric cipher. Hash has 160 bits, so we can get the full key from that. Then we store this encrypted block under the hash of the block. That means if you just have this tuple, this pair stored on your hard drive, the double hash and the encrypted block, you can no longer decrypt. But if I ask you for this double hash, you can send me a reply back. And I, if I had the single hash, can decrypt this. And the single hashes are then used to build the inner blocks. What we also do is, on top of this tree that I showed at the beginning, we store a special node where we can put some meta information, like a description of the file. We need to put the file size in there, which enables the user to get some information about the file before downloading it entirely. Right? We want to be able to give the user search results, and then the user can say, aha, out of these results that I got, this one has the right description, the right file size, this could be what I want. Limitations of this encoding, just in general, is if somebody can guess what the content is, what you were storing, well, they can compute the encoding of the content and get the exact files, the exact keywords, the keys that were used and everything. Why is that not a problem? Well, the assumption is you want to just be able to say, I did not guess what the content was. So I didn't have any idea what I was transmitting here. That you were able to guess this, dear FBI, well, good for you. I had no idea of finding out. So we want to share content here. It's important to keep in mind. We don't want to hide it. Right? So a guessing attack is okay as long as it's hard enough and cannot be plausibly requested from us to be done on every little piece of content. Also, the benefit here is if you do it this way, you can have this that you identify two identical things always go to the same data. Otherwise, you cannot have this because you need this identification. What are the benefits? At the beginning, I said we want to be able to share content from our hard drive directly. I've got a file in plain text on my drive, and I don't want to have an additional encrypted copy. In this scheme, every of these 1K blocks is encrypted independently, and I don't have to look at any of the others, at least for most of the blocks, not for the inner part of the tree, but for the leaves, which are obviously the majority of the data, I don't have to look at any of the other blocks. So if I get a request for one of these blocks, and I have some little database that tells me it's in this file at this offset, I just have to read this 1K block, encrypt it, and can send it out. I don't have to store an additional encrypted copy on my machine. This is in particular beneficial if there are many people who have the same file on their drive and everybody just encrypts a little bit of it on demand when the request comes and not the whole file each time. We have inherent integrity checks. At the end, when I decrypted the block, I see if the decrypted block has the right hash, and I know I got the right file, and it's implausible for somebody to be able to manipulate the encrypted data without me noticing at the end. Said already, multiple independent insertions result in identical blocks. The memory consumption to produce the encoding is obviously logarithmic because we just have to have the height of the tree. We chose the block size to be fairly small so we can use UDP packets which have kind of the optimal Ethernet size and then have less fragmentation on the network. And most of all, really, this very small block size, we have the requirement in the network that all blocks, everything that is transmitted between two nodes, has this size of 1,500 octets with padding and headers and stuff. So all traffic looks absolutely uniform. You can take a couple of queries, say 40 queries, group them in one packet, send them out. an adversary cannot see from the outside. It's encrypted between the two nodes. Is this content? Is this a bunch of queries? Is it a mixture? He can't tell. So we can make traffic very, very uniform, which makes the traffic analysis very hard. Okay. Good.
Hang on, let me get out of the chair. Yes, please. Hello, folks. Everybody here know who I am? Okay. Well, don't applaud yet because I get to chew you out. It's Friday, and so far it's been great. We haven't had anybody killed. There's been no drug overdoses. No one's put green pool dye in the pools, which we appreciate. However, someone has thought it very clever to be a thief. And someone is stealing high-end camera gear. So far we've had two digital cameras disappear from people's rooms. One is an Olympus camera, which rings in about $800. The other one's a Sony video camera, which rings in about $900. What we're asking for, and this is very important, both cameras were used in the Cannonball Run from California, which is an important event that we wanted to capture on film. These are staff cameras that were taken. You know, we can replace the cameras. We can't replace the pictures. So we're offering general amnesty to whomever took it, if they will either bring back the chip that has the film or the pictures on it, or if they're of a giving sort and feel guilty for what they did and which they should, we'd like the cameras back. You can bring them to the NOC. The NOC is over here on the other side of the main building. You can give it to Kat or anybody in the NOC. They will not try to apprehend you. They will not report you. They will not kick you out of the convention. We'd really just like to get the pictures back. Now, and I would encourage all of you to keep an eye on your own stuff, since there's someone among us who's an asshole and is stealing from his brethren, which really sucks. And if you see anybody who is going into people's rooms who you know he shouldn't be going into or she shouldn't be going into, please take the time to report it to security, because that's just a major downer for everybody. So sorry to interrupt the presentation. Sorry to be such a hard case, but come on, guys. We're here to have a good time. We're not here to rob from each other. You want to do that, go somewhere else. Thanks for your time.
Okay, so far, except for this on-demand encoding and the more uniform block size, Freenet is doing pretty much the same things. Right, there's not much new here. The really special part is, in my opinion, is the searching, how we really do the searching. And what we want to be able to do at the end is say, we have no centralization, it's hard to attack the search, we can use, queries are encrypted, but it's easy to use the keys, right? The searching must be anonymous, and that's the really hard part, we want to detect malicious people that send us back garbage. And why is that hard? Well, I want to be able, for an intermediary, to detect that a malicious person is sending me garbage. Now, the intermediaries, remember, are not supposed to know the query or be able to look at the content. They're not supposed to know what the question was or what the answer is. So how can they check that the answer actually matched the query? What Freenet did was a very simple approach there. They said the query is the hash of the encrypted data. Then you just get the result back and match that. But this still has a problem with the searching, because if you don't know what you're looking for some Metallica song, but how the hell on earth are you going to get the hash of that encrypted song? There's no way, right? So we want to be able to search and still be able to verify that the reply that we're getting back is actually not some malicious guy sending us back def random. Okay. Even better, the search, we don't want the user to specify some hash code. Right? You were supposed to use a normal, simple natural language keyword. And, of course, efficiency and all these other things still apply. So, search example. Search for MP3 and Metallica and DMCA. Nice little Boolean query. Would be nice if we could do regular expressions, but we're not there yet. And the idea is the network returns you back a list of files with a description saying, this is what I found. You select which file you want, and then the network downloads it. Okay. So first part is easy. How do we do this with the keywords? When you insert a file into the network, you can specify a list of keywords. For each of the keywords, we do something special to this root node, this top node that we were storing with the description. We're not storing this under its own hash code, but under the hash of the keyword, encrypting this with this, and storing under the hash of the hash of the keyword. So here, this h of k, that's the difference for the root node. This allows us just to use a normal natural language keyword as opposed to a hash code. And now, if you want to search for foo and bar, well, you search for foo independently, search for bar independently, and you can then compute intersection, naturally. So, intuition, you have a key for a block, the hash of it, the file name, as I said, is the hash of the hash of the block. Intuitively, would say, ask for the hash of the hash of the block, right? Now, here we go. What we are really doing is we're asking for the hash of the hash of the hash of the block. Yeah, they always laugh at this point. interesting enough, some crypto professor said to me, suppose hashing is a very, very expensive operation. Is there any way to get rid of it? He spent half an hour thinking about it and couldn't find a way to achieve the same thing. What is the reason? Well, if you strip off the hash in the query, one of the hash codes, right? Oh, first of all, what do we achieve? The reply contains this double hash. This double hash essentially is a proof that the node who is responding had an idea about the question. The guy who is responding has to send this proof along with the reply that he was able to essentially revert this one-way function, this third hash code, and this proves that the guy who is sending you the reply had a very good idea what your question was. He had no idea to obtain the double hash other by guessing or inserting some content under the keyword that you're looking for. So it's very plausible to assume that, well, he had an idea, so it's very hard for him to cheat. It's not impossible. Of course, you can have guessed the keyword and then still send back garbage in the encrypted form. We couldn't check that. But it's very hard for you to cheat in general, or costly in some sense. So this double hash proves to an intermediary that the guy who's sending you the reply knew something that he had only a way to find out by knowing what the question was or being given the answer from somebody else. Right? I mean, it's transitive. Okay. Questions on this part? Yes.
It seems like your adversary can guess a query and then check it offline because he has hash of hash and hash of B.
Guess a query? Well, you can always build a dictionary attack or something like this.
It would be better if you send him something and he had to send it back to you in order to tell his yes query was correct or not.
Can you repeat the question?
The question is,
the amplified version.
I didn't quite get the question the way that I could repeat it. That's my problem.
The question is, it seems to me that with this, the adversary can guess a keyword and then offline check whether his guess is correct.
The adversary can guess a keyword. If he can guess a keyword, he is going to be able to check that this guess is correct so fast he doesn't need to do anything offline. The problem is, of course, if you reply to the host after 5 days, ha, I got the answer, right? Which is, by the way, a pretty fast time to invert a ripe 160 hash function, in my opinion. then the other guy would just say, well, by now I've long time forgotten what I was asking, right? I mean, so the only real thing you can do is if you have a dictionary of keywords and say, for all these keywords, I want to do an attack, you can do that. But you're limited. You first have to guess what it's going to be. Right. So, and the problem is, of course, you can always say, I insert def random under all of these keywords into the network. That's equivalent. And since, in my opinion, a computer is very far away from being able to distinguish, to say, well, this keyword and this random data doesn't really match, we won't be able to guard against that anyway. But the problem is if you give economic incentives, which we're going to discuss later, for somebody sending you a reply, he would now have an interest to send you back garbage if he could. That's why we have to make that hard. Okay. Yeah? Okay, so the keywords. That's an interesting issue. Well, first of all, the user can specify a list of keywords manually and can put whatever he wants there. No, we're not doing file names. What we've got is a bit better system. First of all, if you manually specify something for a file name, you can do whatever you want. But we've also written a library, which I think deserves some more attention. It's called libextractor. And that takes any kind of file and extracts meta information. It can read MP3 ID tags. It can read real audio ID tags. It can read awk ID tags. It can read JPEG comments. It can read GIF comments and so on. It can read HTML and see what the title and the author and so on are. And it can use those as keywords automatically. The problem is if you use file names, the user has to specify manually in a dozen places, and these ugly 200 character file names to just get all the keywords in Nutella are just bad. So what we tried to do is make it easier for the user to specify keywords by just extracting them from the file and trying to infer the keywords from the data, which is a better approach than just specifying them manually. But no, the question is, do you hack them in pieces at spaces or not? It's up to you. It's an option.
When you're composing
you can compose search terms in a Boolean fashion. You can say, I search for foo, I search for bar, I get 50 results from each back, and because the user said end, well, the GUI will just display the ones that match both.
Okay. You're not doing any kind of composition.
No, we're not doing any composition in the query engines, and the reason is very simple. If you put in a file under a keyword foo in the network, and your friend puts in the same file under a keyword bar, now the keywords matching reside on very different nodes. So doing this combination in a distributed fashion would be very hard. The problem is you want to also have the anonymity properties and all the other things, and then it's getting very messy. And the client combining things is just a very easy approach. Anyway, let's continue. We claim it's impossible to do better. First of all, as I said, the computer cannot distinguish random noise from something that really matches the keyword. And you can't assign blame if the sender is supposed to be anonymous, then you can't use that to go against the people. Okay, so how do we do routing? The problem with routing is you don't want to be easy to guess what you're going to do. You want to make it very hard for an adversary to determine how your node is going to behave. If you look at Freenet with a very static routing scheme, right, you forward to one guy, right, this guy does something, comes back to you, and then you forward to the next guy. That's fairly easy to do a traffic analysis on. We want to make this much harder. So we get a query. We have a table of hosts that we're connected with, say, by default, something like 128 if there are so many in the network. So very high connectivity degree. We get a query. We forward it to N randomly chosen host. N can be chosen based on the load. How busy are we? Do we have enough network capacity? How important is the query? How much do we like the guy that it's coming from? We have to keep track of the queries forwarded, of course. Detect loops with time to live and all these standard tricks. And what we can also do is we looked a little bit at short. Are you familiar with short or chort, whatever it's pronounced? Anybody? Should I briefly explain? Okay. The idea is in chort, you want to say, I take the hash of the content, map this into an address space where I arranged all the nodes. And on the nodes that are closest to the point where the content is hashed into this address space, that's where the content is going to reside, which kind of has the disadvantage that you have to move content to that location up front. Right? If you put content into a chort network, it has to move to the node that has been computed from the content. But it has very good property. If you want to retrieve content, you can compute where it's going to be and just go there shortest path. Right? There are many variants of this theme that essentially say we are able to compute where the content is going to be. We don't want to do this because we have this idea of being able to share on demand your local MP3 collection. But it would be beneficial. And of course, you want to be able to move content around the network anyway. Nodes can cache things and so on. So what we do is we said, we have this idea of choosing the next hosts at random. But we can bias the random slightly. We can say, if the distance metric between what we are searching for and the host key is small, we prefer these hosts slightly. By chance, you may hit the host on the content on any host anyway over time, if the user searches long enough. But you have a higher chance of hitting content on hosts which is close. Now, why would the content get to these hosts if we don't explicitly migrate it there? Well, if content is moving around the network, These hosts know that this content is close to their own host key and are more likely to keep it. This way, kind of, the content smoothly moves to these hosts, that's the idea, as opposed to being forced to be at that location. It's also good for censorship because, well, you have the idea that these 50 hosts are more likely to store it, but there's no guarantee, and it can be anywhere else replicated anyway, and could be found there. Okay. So, overall, what are we trying to do here? Traffic analysis, try to make this a nightmare. We group several queries into a larger packet, content, random noise, other network information. We introduce delays when forwarding. We make all packets look uniform in size. And of course, all traffic is link-to-link encrypted and padded with noise. So if you want to do a traffic analysis on this network, I would say good luck. And the assumption is here, of course, even if you got a couple of malicious hosts in the network that participate and can decrypt parts of the traffic, they can't really say where it's coming from because it's all looking very uniform. And also, you have this very high degree of connectivity that we're trying to achieve is something like over 100 hosts connected to, which makes it even harder because you don't have these easier paths. And, of course, every packet, every request can be routed a totally different way. So you can't say we've got over time this connection. This guy goes to there. There is no such notion as a path that's forming permanently. All that's forming kind of semi-permanently is session keys between two nodes, which uses for a link encryption for a while. Right. Open issues? Well, as I said before, how about regular expressions on the queries? What if you mistype the keyword? Well, that could be a good way to obfuscate it, make the guessing attack harder. But being able to do it more approximately would be nice for some things. It's one of the things. There may be a lot of content on the network currently, but you have to guess the right keywords to find it. Yes?
There's some work on fuzzy hash function.
Yes, there's work on fuzzy hash function. Yes, we've looked into that. The problem is the more fuzzy you make the hash, the easier it is to guess something. It's kind of a trade-off thing. What you can also just use is say, well, what about if I have the wrong capitalization? Well, you can just make the client do everything all caps. Well, you just lose entropy and make it easier to guess because now the adversary knows, well, all keywords are going to be all caps. But it's not easy to make approximate queries happen without having a security implication there. Yeah? By doing what? You asked if you can DOS the network by doing lots of indexing. I don't know what kind of indexing information you want to throw around. You can throw around queries for content, but you can't tell somebody else to index something. Yes, the nodes locally, they see content coming by because it was requested, right? And then they can decide to keep it or not, if they like it. But there's nothing that I can tell you, please store this content or something like this explicitly. Yes? Yeah, Trojan horse attack. What if the MPI puts a lot of keywords up and there's garbage behind it, was the question, right? Well, the idea is if you find out that under these keywords there's lots of bad stuff, right, you append _DEFCON to your keyword and then you're safe because the MPI would never guess that. Right? It's kind of an arms race. If the MPAA is able to guess your password, they can crack your computer, so you make the password harder, which of course makes it harder for other people to find your files, but the idea is you can find probably a balance. Yes? No, there are no humans involved in maintaining the hosts or anything. The network is entirely self-organizing. Hosts communicate the knowledge about other hosts in the network, and all you really need to start with is download an initial host list, which actually our current version does automatically for you from a web server, a list of known hosts to start with, and then from then on the entire network is self-organized, so there's nobody maintaining a list or something like this.
No,
there's no human involved usually in normal network operation, definitely not. Yes.
It sounds like a lot of the problems you're dealing with, you are trying to detect and deal with nodes that are trying to do bad things. It sounds like you've got mechanisms in place to detect when those things are happening. Have you ever thought about a cryptographic reputation system?
We're talking about the reputation system next. That was the question, and that's going to come very soon. Okay? Let's first briefly talk about anonymity, because I think this is what the section is mostly about, right? I mean, well. So, first, what are the briefly overview about generally techniques for to achieve anonymity, attacks, how to do it efficiently. Then, in GNU, we try to have a new perspective, and at the end, we'll see how malicious we can be. I mean, this is a hacker conference, right? Okay. So basic building blocks for anonymity will have always kind of been indirections, random delays, shuffling around, noise, using noise, and of course confidential communication for all of the above. Attacks, we've heard a couple of them, or a lot of them today in the Mixed Minion talk. Traffic analysis, timing analysis, having malicious hosts participate in the network, and statistic analysis doing correlation attacks over time, things like that. First question, kind of efficiency-wise. If you indirect a query or reply, this is, has, of course, an implication on how much bandwidth you're using. If I have n hops, which I use for indirecting something, well, I have to transfer n times the amount of data I had to transfer, right? So that's usually bad. We try to do better than that. Let's give me an example for how. Suppose you want to do money laundering. Anybody has too much money here? Nobody invested in Enron? Okay. So if I want to hide my financial transaction, right, would I want to give my money to my neighbor? Right? Expect my neighbor to give it, you give the money to your neighbor gives it to me, right? And then I, of course, expect that nobody told the FBI that what they did, right? Right? This is always in mixed meaning. You have got the idea that at least on your path there's one honest participant who doesn't expose everything. Well, and of course, there could always be some guy who just takes the money and runs, right? So you don't want to have dishonest participants. That's when you lose email in Mixed Minion. Well, how would we do really money laundering? I've got a much better idea. I mean, here in Las Vegas, it's kind of natural. I usually use banks, but we could use casinos. The idea is you open a bank, you make millions of transactions for customers, right? And then you do your own little transaction, which is comparatively very small. And then all you really need to do is not keep any records. If your bank is a big black box and you are doing millions of transactions, right? You are the New York Stock Exchange. And suppose there are no records because you didn't keep any. Then you can add your own little transaction and it's going to be very hard for the FBI to prove that you actually did anything. Especially in a model like in GNUnet where you can say, I forward to N people. N can be anything between 0 and 100, right? So they can't really tell, oh, you added one. Unless they can kind of find out all transactions. Is this idea coming around? So, why do we indirect? I claim indirections do not protect the sender or the receiver. If you got a strong adversary, he can see this guy sent something, this guy received something. Strong adversary looks at the traffic, says there was something going on. But it can help the indirector. If there's some guy who has millions of these, or thousands, depending on how much security you want, it's very hard for the guy who looks at this black box to find out what's going on. If the indirector cheats, how could he cheat? Well, he could say, by the way, receiver, this packet came from over there. Who is going to be harmed by that? Many people say, well, look, now the sender is exposed, right? Well, the sender was exposed before if the adversary is strong enough because he could just see this guy was sending something. But what is more important is the guy who was routing the query has reduced his anonymity set because he has one query less which he can say, I was routing and you don't know where it came from, where it went to. But if you cheat in the sense of exposing who was from where you received the query, you are just cheating yourself in some sense. Because it's clear what you were doing. You're exposing your internal mechanics. So routing queries for others, indirecting traffic, and using source rewriting for that protects the guy who's routing. If you're a router on the internet that does network address translation, you can insert a packet and say, well, wasn't me. Received it from somewhere else, especially if all communications are confidential. So our claim is source rewriting protects the guy who does the rewriting, because he can, all the traffic that's originating from him looks the same. It's all coming from him, presumably. But we know he's just forwarding 1,000 packets. So how we want to perceive anonymity is in some sense saying, how much traffic from a non-malicious host did I indirect compared to the traffic that I generated myself? If I'm routing traffic for an adversary, well, the adversary might know what the traffic was. But if I've got some other participants I'm just routing traffic for, that increases my anonymity because it increases the possibility that I did not originate this offensive packet. Of course, timing analysis means that you have to look at these questions always in a certain time interval. It doesn't help you for saying, well, I indirected 1,000 queries yesterday, and today there's only my one query. Well, they won't really believe that you were doing the 1,000 queries from yesterday, now doing one more of those. How can we use this? Well, very, very strong title here, right? Anonymity for free. Anybody buys it? Free beer? The idea is, if I'm idle, I can measure how busy my machine is, then I indirect. Doesn't cost me anything. If I'm getting too busy, I'll tell the receiver, by the way, this question came from that guy over there. And then the receiver can send the reply directly and doesn't bother me. And of course, when I'm very busy and I can't even forward, then I just drop everything. Why is that okay? If I'm already indirecting a lot of traffic, the presumably small amounts that I'm generating are already well hidden. I don't need more traffic to hide my own traffic in. So at the point where it's getting critical, where I'm getting a resource drain, where I'm under high pressure, lots of traffic is coming through, I can become more efficient by not indirecting anymore, at least not the replies. Yes? Yes, the queries are a hash code that I can't really see what they were for, yes. Yes. Okay, so the question was, the attack was, okay, I'm an adversary, right, and I push lots of traffic through you. You are very happy. You stop indirecting traffic from others. And now, because you're routing only my traffic, I can tell whenever you send a packet yourself, because that was not one of mine and you're not indirecting for anything from anybody else. Right, that's the question. Well, there are two answers to that. The first one is the economic model. If I detect that you're kind of flooding me with queries and label you as a bad guy and just drop all of your traffic, the attack doesn't work. Second thing is, yes, if you have a gigantic amount of bandwidth available, if you control the internet, if I'm the only guy left, and there is no other traffic from foreign hosts to hide in, right? They don't send noise, you cut all the other lines, everybody else is offline, I can't hide anyway. If the adversary is too strong, if the adversary controls too much bandwidth, yes, that's a problem. That depends on how much you have. It's really just a relationship between how much you have and how much the adversary has. Right? What is important to make sure is that the adversary has a hard time to trick you to connect to his hosts and routed off his traffic. So that's why also the high connectivity comes in. If you have 100 hosts that you're connected to, it's very hard for an adversary to control all of these or a lot of these to send you a lot of traffic from them. Right? So our model to establish connections is kind of trying to make it hard for somebody to control all of your connections. If you're any node on the internet and all nodes around you that you're communicating with are controlled by an adversary, in my opinion, you can't be anonymous at all. Because any action that you're doing is exposed instantly. So you always need this assumption that you have traffic from other non-compromised parties. We always do that. And the question was kind of noise, additional forwarding, we always do that. There's always some noise in the system, some background. And of course, as I said, the multiplication to how many you forward can be anything. getting very coarse here. Let me just briefly go over the accounting. There seem to be many questions. We can also definitely take a couple of them offline. Okay, if we don't do any accounting, it's easy to mount an attack on us. Just make us route lots of queries, and then the legitimate users can't use it anymore. And of course, we don't want to run into patent issues. Anyway, so goals, we want to reward contributing nodes with better service. Accountability, in our sense, is really just for the amount of resource that you're using. We don't care what you are doing with the resources. You're anonymous. You're not supposed to expose to us what you're doing with them, right? But we want to be able to make sure that you are accountable for the amount of resources you're using to some extent. One non-goal is we want to allow you to download harmless amounts. If you're not really disturbing network operations, I don't really care. That's okay. As long as you don't overdo it and threaten the network that it goes down for it. So harmless freeloading should be okay. We just want to prevent the network from going down, provide incentives to keep it operational. Okay, first of all, we don't want to send to a server, right? We don't want to trust anybody. Do you want to trust anybody? Especially with your money? No, right? First problem is that this kind of rules out most digital cash schemes. Because you have this bank who has to sign the blind money, right? How do you get money? If you don't have a bank to give out cash, how can you get money into the system? You can't let some arbitrary user make up money. 5 minutes? You can't let some arbitrary user make up money because then, well, it might be worthless. And of course, well, you don't want to say these guys are all well-behaved and they tell me the truth what they're doing. Another important problem that was kind of coming up was, what if you can make up a new identity at any time? For GNUnet, an identity is a public key. Well, you can generate a new one, I would say. It's easy, right? So if I keep track of saying, you have downloaded a gigabyte from me, and then you suddenly go away and make a new identity, and now you're somebody else for me. Well, that's not a good way to keep track of people abusing the system. And of course, you want to have the ability for new nodes to join the network. Our basic idea was we use what humans have been doing for quite a while, and that is trusting each other. Well, security and trust, right? I mean, do you like to trust somebody? Didn't I just say don't trust anybody? Well, what we can do is we can start to form an opinion about somebody without trusting a third party. We trust just our own feelings, our own view of the world. I form my opinion on a one-by-one basis. There's no something like a global credit rating in GNUnet. I like some other node. But that doesn't mean that this other node likes me or that everybody likes that node. Also, humans do not charge for every little favor, right? But we're usually grateful for every little favor. Two fairly simple ideas. And of course, last but not least, there's no guarantee in life. Especially if I helped you at some point, sent you data, there's no peer-to-peer network, in my opinion, that can guarantee that you will send me data back later. You can just disappear. There's no way to stop you from doing that. So we can't give any strong guarantees in the sense that you will be paid back. Now, what can we do? Well, first, what are we doing? If I'm idle, doing a favor to somebody, sending data to them, doesn't cost me anything. Right? My network connection is lying around, it's not used. My CPU is idle most of the time anyway. So, doing a favor for free doesn't cost me anything. If somebody else does me a favor, I can remember that. I can remember this was a good guy. He replied to my query. If I'm busy, well, I work for the guys I like most, or that pay most. But paying in the sense of they sent me data earlier, I like them. If somebody comes in as a new identity, I treat them as neutral. I don't know if they're good. They didn't do me anything good yet. They've got a trust, as we would say, of zero. We never have a negative trust, because then somebody would suddenly have an identity, an interest to change his identity. The lowest trust you can have in ignorant is zero, which means there's no way that you ever gain anything by changing your identity. There might be people who liked you. For those who go to zero, there might be people who hate you at zero, for those who don't change anything. So by saying we never dislike anybody, we don't give them an incentive to change their identity. Now, what we have to deal with in this situation where we base everything on trust and one-on-one relationships is transitivity. In particular, what we have to make sure is that some nodes who conspire against some harmless node B, right? Suppose A, C, and D conspire against B, that they can't play the trust. A asks B to do something, B asks C something, C sends a reply to B, B sends it back to A. Right, now B knows C sent me a good reply, and A charge, I have to charge A for something. Now, this could be played back and forth a couple of times, and B would do work. And what is important that we set up the trust ratings in a way that B over time benefits from this and notices that A and C are just abusing it in some sense. Okay, what are the open issues in our economy? If a node is idle, we will not charge the sender. That's fine. You can't DOS detect somebody who is not busy. If the network is busy, it will start to detect it. So, okay, suppose node is idle. Then, if a node delegates something, indirects a query, it must use a lower priority because it must make itself some profit. So, conclusion, if an idle node delegates, well, it didn't charge the sender, so it will have priority zero on the next hop. Which means, of course, that the receiver of the next message cannot gain anything by answering this priority zero question. So, problem by that is that if you have a long transitivity chain, it might be that the trust just goes too low if many people are idle in the network. That nobody has an interest to answer the question anymore. Why is this kind of still okay? Well, if everybody is idle, they can still do it. It doesn't cost them anything. And we hope to have, because of this very high degree of connectivity, a very distributed load. That it is unlikely that some guys are idle and some other guys are totally busy. Right? Because the queries go over all the network, just statistically. Okay, I guess I have to get to the end. I think GNU/Linux is already a cool system for privacy. We can do accountability in the sense that you get a better service if you provided resources. You are anonymous. It can already be used. The code is online. The system is basically working. It works on a Linux and a BSD. We hope in the future to also address other operating systems. And of course, it could get much better. One of the points that was already in an earlier talk saying, well, user interfaces are usually a problem, right, in this community. Everybody likes to write crypto code, but user interfaces are not the hobby of most people. We've got command line tools, which are fairly nice. There's a GTK GUI for searching for content, but there's, for example, no GUI to put in content. So GUI work is definitely something that could happen. And, well, there's a web page on ovmj.org/gnunet and also on gnu.org/software/gnunet. And we've got mailing lists, a couple, a bug tracking system, and of course you can look at the code if you need further information. Yes, the URL. There you are. Do we have time for questions? Don't see anybody saying no. Okay, go.
Back to this question on overloading the system for a particular user, is there a way to specify no individual one gets more than some X percentage of your total? So basically, you're not cutting off all traffic, busy, but you're just...
Okay, the question was if we have a way to limit an individual node's amount of bandwidth that it can send us. Principally, this would be trivial to implement, but it's too easy for somebody who has enough bandwidth to just make up a second identity and run two nodes in parallel that I would consider this really worthwhile. Yes?
You would prevent a node from cheating, and
Okay, what would prevent a node from cheating and claiming to be busy? Well, the node doesn't claim to be busy to anybody else. This is just really purely internal bookkeeping of the node. And the idea is your node must be able to distinguish the good guys from the bad guys, because you have an interest in sending answers to the good guys, because then they will like you and send you answers to your questions later. So your local node has a very intrinsic interest to acquire adequate knowledge about the other guys. You don't go out to the world and say, I was very busy and served this guy his query. No, you just said, I was busy and I helped this guy. Right? Or you say, well, I was idle and helped these guys. And all that really counts is that you know when you have the challenge, two requests come in and you only have resources to answer one. That you know which of these two is the better guy. And that's why you have an interest in doing adequate bookkeeping and kind of charging people higher prices if your resources are stretched. Just economically, right? If you're very busy, your salary goes up. One would hope. Time out. So I was asked to get rid of this computer.
Throw it.
Okay. Oh, Blake wanted to ask a trivia question. Come on, go with your trivia question. By the way, if you've got questions on GNU/Net, Blake is another developer who happens to be here at the moment. He is especially responsible for BSD issues.
Thanks. What was the first computer that Seymour Cray developed? And keep in mind, he was not with Cray Computers at the time. Okay, new question. Someone has a hand up. I'm sorry. That's close, though. Yes, that's right. Come on up and get your free supercomputer. It's right here.